Fantasy sports and politics.
Let's get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics.
Hello. It is me, it is me, it is Mr. FSP Norris. I do it for you all day, every day, and I do it matter of fact lay. You dig. Two snaps in the air if you don't care. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Yeah, you're I'm rare back. Today. I can see that.
I will be. Trust me. I had a hiatus past couple weeks. Got to do some of my real job. And I know JT's been holding it down, doing his thing. Last week I came in at the tail end as he did the AFC East. And like I told him last week, the Jets are going to win the East. I got a surprise for who's going to come in second. Yes, I said second in the AFC West today. Possibly. I got to hear the schedule again and all that other stuff before I blurt it out. But we'll talk about that today. My man, JT ATM Money's on the line.
What's up?
So what's going on, JT? How you feel?
All right, I feel fine, man. I feel great. I'm not doing that thing for Uncle Sam, but I'm still doing okay.
You retired. You resigned your commission, so you're good. Look, we got a great show so for you, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely.
All brought to you by FantasySportsbookAndCasino.com, where winners win and players play. So go there today, place your wager so you can win some money and get paid. Today's show, we're going to cover the AFC West. The AFC West, I think Jerry promoted AFC North last week, but I had to make a slight change at the last minute, and my guy is very accommodating, so he's ready to rock and roll. We're going to do that.
Yep.
We're going to talk about the Washington team, football team, and the patent that they just lost. I have my thoughts on what's going to happen in that situation. JT has his thoughts. And it's made me rethink a couple other situations that goes on that have been going on in the world as it relates to sports. We'll talk about that topic. We'll talk a little bit about the World Cup. As the Master Plans commercial goes, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little baseball, a little basketball. This is the Master Plan. No, this is Fantasy Sports and Politics. So we got a jam-packed show. And anything else JT wants to talk about today, we're going to get it on the air. Some boxing, Kevin Love being traded to the to the Golden State Warriors and Kyle? It was one of the Splash Brothers getting sent to the Lakers. I want to talk about that a little bit as well. So, if you want to call in, get in on the conversation, always dial the Fantasy Sportsbook and Casino.com hotline, which is 347-637-3220. Again, that number is 347-637-3220. You get the voice heard. Or you go to blogtalkradio.com/DICHBK and click on this show, this current live streaming show, and check out the chat line. You know, you post something in there, we might say it on the air, good or bad. But, if you come hard, you better come correct, because we're no joke. We'll try to keep it civil, but I don't know. I'm feeling a little spry today. I might go off a little bit because I'm tired, sleep deprived. Also, before I let you go, JT, also, if you ever want to catch one of the shows, archive show, you can do it two ways. Well, three ways. One, you can come back here to blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. Go to our archives and listen to any show there. You can go to spotonradio.webs.com. We're a 24-hour, 365, 7 days a week service with the latest episodes from our network. Right now, FST Crew Show is streaming 24-7, 365. Pretty soon, this episode, shortly after this show goes off the air, will be on that service. You can also go to fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com for the same service. Check out our sponsors page. If you want to be a sponsor, jump on board. With that being said, JT, let's jump right into basketball since it just ended. I plan to boycott the NBA, but I want to talk about two things. And if you want to throw something else in there, that's cool too.
Sure.
I want to talk about how correct we were in the Spurs victory. And I also want to talk about the trade or the sign and trade situation with Golden State getting Kevin Love out west and letting go of Klay Thompson to the Lakers, which is that's pretty damn good for the Lakers. Pretty damn good. So I'll let you pick which one you want to talk about first.
Well, let's talk about the first one first. Far away.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you listen to this show or the crew show or the master plan, you would know that JT and myself correctly predicted that the Spurs would defeat LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade. You notice I didn't say the Heat because the Heat isn't a team, at least not yet. We had a couple people. They'll remain nameless.
No, I'm not going to. Wait a minute. Before you go any further, I'm going to call them out, okay? Your cousin, for one, was saying that we were there's no way that the Heat were going to lose. Basically, he said that. I think your boy Mike, right, Black, he said the same thing. And I'm trying to think my man CO that called in every now and then also said the same thing about the Heat. Clearly, in my opinion, and quite naturally in yours, they weren't looking realistically. They were looking at what they thought they were seeing from last year and the year before. Totally different team, totally different circumstances that were took place this year, especially with the San Antonio Spurs. And as we kept on stressing, emphatically, they were a better team. And I kept on saying that just like you. They were a better team versus better individuals on a team. As Miami Heat, in a lot of people's opinion, had better individual players than the San Antonio Spurs. But the San Antonio Spurs were a better team.
You can rant a little more. I got some background noise. So
okay.
I'll let you rant. Like
so,
one
I mean,
more.
You know, let me put it this way. Ever since that took place, and I'm not saying he's busy or whatever, but I haven't talked to your cousin.
That
and I'm kind of disappointed since the last time we talked, and he was talking about the Miami Heat, that he hasn't been on any of the programs since they lost. Maybe it's a coincidence. Maybe he's a super busy. I don't know. But I'm just saying.
You know, Jerry, you know he cannot stand to eat crow. It's not in his DNA.
Well, you know him better than I do.
Yeah, I mean, because I can't eat crow, but I've learned to be humble. I learned to be very humble. But I was going to attack all of them, not just my cousin. But I let you do it, and you did an admirable job. But again, I might not be right 100% of the time. But when
right.
I see a team, when I see a team go up against a group of players that think they can turn it on and off at any given moment, you know, that's a problem. Popovich, all season long, prepared his team for that series. Let me explain that, ladies and gentlemen. Popovich rested Parker, rested Duncan, rested Ginobili, took the fines from the commissioner because he didn't play his star players during certain regular season games. Yes, I know that kind of sucks, but his team had fresh legs. The Heat had just got finished a battle with the Pacers. Okay? The Spurs, they had somewhat of a go, you know, with Oklahoma City and the team they played in the first round, but they were fresh. Popovich managed his team better than Sproles. The only reason why he did that is because Miami were in very close games, and they couldn't sit down and rest LeBron and Wade and Bosh for a quarter, for half a quarter, even though at the end of game seven, I think LeBron sat out the last 7 to 8 minutes of the game, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the greatest player on the planet, as some people might say, and you were one of them at the time, shouldn't be sitting out the last 7 to 8 minutes. I don't care if it's a blowout or not. When you're leading 22-8 at the end of the first quarter, and you lose by 19, you don't have the best player on the planet at all. You don't. You don't have the best team in the National Basketball Association. Or, in my new terms, no blacks allowed. That's my new acronym for the NBA.
Oh, boy.
But you just don't. And I think when you look at how everybody, as you said, Jerry, everybody was all gangbusters about what they did last year, how they defeated the Spurs last year. You got to realize the Spurs were like 30 seconds away from winning the NBA title last year. So it wasn't
yep.
like the Heat. It wasn't like the Heat dominated them, like they got dominated this year. Pop saw the issues. He addressed the issues. He corrected the issues. The Spurs beat the Heat like they were a one seed versus an eight seed in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Period.
Yep.
And if someone tried to dispute that, I'll just point to the deficit of the losses. Each loss that he sustained was by 15 points or more.
Yep.
That's not how a championship series or championship games should end, by 15 points or more blowout. Nah, guy.
Well, think about this, Vic. The one game that they won, I'm talking about the Miami Heat, the one game that they won it by really 5 points because the San Antonio hit the last point three-pointer, last second three-pointer, and dropped the difference to two. But if you watch the fourth quarter, they were, for the most part, San Antonio was winning that fourth quarter, and then they lost track of what they normally were doing, like in the first game and then subsequently in the last three games that they won. And the Heat barely won that. Now, just think about this, people. Just think about this. The most the Heat scored throughout the whole series was the game that they won, 98 points. They didn't even hit the century mark once. Once. And they paid for it. And I attribute the one loss that the San Antonio Spurs, not to the Heat, more to the Spurs, because they stopped playing halfway through the fourth quarter Spurs basketball, and it cost them the win. Otherwise, in my opinion, it would have been a sweep because that's the way they played. They were winning that whole game in the second game of the series. And then all of a sudden, and I really don't think it had anything to do with Miami, and it proved that Miami never was able to do what they did in the second game for the rest of the games. I think it was really of what the San Antonio Spurs stopped doing in the second half of the fourth quarter to have them lose that game. So even though it was 4-1, in my opinion, that was a sweep, and they shouldn't even have been on the same court. I mean, it was really no contest. When they still had lost that, I still believed in them, just like you did, that I'm talking about San Antonio Spurs, that they would defeat the Miami Heat. And it just grew when they blew them out the first game at Miami, when they blew them out the second game where in Miami, when everybody in God's creation thought, because Miami never loses back-to-back games, and especially in Miami, Miami's going to come back with a vengeance, in quotation marks. They're going to right the wrong that happened in the third game, and they got blown out even worse in the third, in the second game in Miami. So, and you can see the frustration and the look of like a deer in the headlights of guys that didn't have an answer. You can see it in the coach's face that didn't have an answer for what the San Antonio Spurs put on them. In the first game of Miami, and then especially when they thought they were going to, because they never had it happen to them before, but they never ran against a team like this before. So they never thought that they would be in the situation, especially getting blown out twice back-to-back at home. It wasn't even close. And I don't know if you watched the closing minutes of the fifth game, when Udonis Haslam and LeBron James, and I don't have to say Shabron James, because what I saw sitting on that bench wasn't the best player on the planet, with his face in his hands, and it looked like Haslam was consoling him, which is like, you got to be kidding me. It's amazing. Amazing to see what happened to them and the aftermath. And I know that one of the things you wanted to talk about this, you wanted to talk about Kevin Love, but I also wanted to talk about the aftermath of what the president of basketball operations had to say about the whole situation after the loss of the Miami Heat to the San Antonio. So I've been going on for a while. I'll sit back and listen.
Well, you know, the aftermath of all this is you put together a superstar set of players, and you get that result, a short answer to a long-term problem. You put together some guys. You say you do it for 5 years, right? You win a few championships, but then you're done. You're done because those guys are going to need to be paid. Somebody's going to have to, you know, go away. Somebody's going to have to remove themselves or take less money because you can't afford to keep those superstars together. So 5 years after the big, you know, take it all together, or whatever the case may be, you end up in a situation where you have to say, well, you know what, it's not a good mixture. Chris Bosh got to go. Wade has to go. So you blow the team up and you start over again. And then you try to convince a Carmelo Anthony, or before Kevin Love signed with Golden State, a Kevin Love to come and start that whole trend over again. It's a quick fix. It's not a long-term solution like building a team from scratch like the San Antonio Spurs did. I mean, you can keep going to the big league. Dwight Howard wanted to get Carmelo down there. He wanted to get somebody else down there so it could be Harden, him, and Melo. Well, that's fine. But how long will that last? You know, who's going to be the one that sacrifices the paycheck year after year after year in order to become a solid team and earn money and earn championships? I don't know.
The blueprint to build a team is, you look at the San Antonio Spurs. You know, they built it the right way. I don't know if they, how many free agents they have. I can't remember, but they made a couple of trades, a couple of moves that wasn't costing them a lot of money. Kawhi Leonard for one, Danny Green for another. These guys all contributed big time, especially the MVP of the finals. So he's young. He's 22, maybe close to 23 years old. That's crazy. As good as that kid is, and he's at the very beginning of his career. And you'd have to think that, I would think that, just like the NFL, and it's a copycat league, that teams look at that, not the trend a few years ago trying to get two or three superstars together to form a fabulous trio. This goes to show you, or show people, including the NBA and even media, who like to hype up the big three in Miami, that you can win as a team. You don't need a huge superstar or three superstars on a team to be able to win. If you act and play as a team, as in the San Antonio Spurs, who were extremely unselfish, didn't care who got the glory, who got the shots, as long as they were winning, and it proved that you can win like this. You know, you got a big star, Tim Duncan. He's won four. Tony Parker, I think he's won three, along with Ginobili. These guys, unselfish. Unselfish, big humble star Tim Duncan, brought in the right way under the tutelage of David Robinson, and he's passed it down. As long as your superstar, I keep on saying this, as long as your superstar buys into the program, everybody else on that team has to buy into it. And Pop, hell of a coach, teaches team concepts, strong defense, and all those players have a specific role, and all of them will play, because it's a team. They go win as a team. They go down as a team. They won 62 regular season games, and with him resting his big time players at certain points of the season for a good reason, so they would be fresh at the end of the season, especially into the playoffs, and it's paid off. I would think that a lot of these teams are going to try to do the same thing. They should have been trying to do the same thing. When is a team not trying to have to pay so many superstars to come to their team? And the Miami Heat, you know, Pat Riley said it pretty well. I don't know if you've seen that press conference. He said everybody needs to get a grip, go home, think about it. Basically, he was telling LeBron, we're not rebuilding, we're retooling. You're going to lose, but just because you're going to lose don't mean you have to run out the door. And I'm paraphrasing what he said, but I'm very close to what Pat Riley said. Just because you lose don't mean you have to run out the door and go somewhere else and quit. Basically, that he's saying quit. So LeBron said he's going to go home and think about what the next move is, quite naturally, with the other two big players on the team. I'll be very surprised if he leaves. I'll be very surprised if they all leave. Let me put it that way. I'd be surprised if they're not back together again. Because, just like he said, they went to four straight championships, won two of them, okay? That's a hell of an accomplishment, regardless of what the media is saying, that break them up and whatever, because the fact is they lost this one, and they lost it very badly. Well, they ran up against a better team, plain and simple, a better team. So that's just telling you, you got to get better players to be a team and not three individuals on a team to carry your team. It doesn't work that way, especially when you get a coach that gets players to buy into the system of passing the ball and not having to have isolation play over and over again. The game of basketball is supposed to be a team sport, not isolation. You get the ball, everybody else get out the way, and let me do my thing. Pass the ball around. Whoever has the open shot, take the open shot. You miss, get back on defense, try to get the ball back, and try to stop the team from scoring. You play team defense, you play team offense, just like San Antonio. You win like you did against Miami Heat. You play individual ball. You have a harder time because the fact is teams are used to giving it to one guy, and when that one guy's not there, he has an off night, then they struggle. Sometimes they win, sometimes they lose, but it's not consistent. You know you're consistent if you play team ball and everybody moves the ball around. Everybody's involved. Everybody knows they're going to get a shot, whether they're on the court starting five or when they're sitting on the bench waiting to come in. They're going to get their shot because everybody's included. No one's really turned away or not sitting on the bench and no hope of getting on any kind of play. And that's the way it should be. But for years, it's been like, give me the ball, get out the way, and let me do my thing. You get the ball when I don't have a shot or when it's convenient for me. Whole different concept. People were amazed. People didn't think it was going to happen, and it happened, pretty easily. Sorry for ranting, but I had to get that out.
It's all right, JC. We do that a lot. We rant a lot. We do what we gotta do. But it is what it is. You know, we can talk about the subjects that are at hand and go from here to there and move forward. So, we're not talking about NBA no more. Let's go to FIFA. You want to go to FIFA?
Go right ahead. I'm not up on it, but go right ahead.
Oh, so you don't follow the World Cup?
No. No, I do not follow the World Cup. I think, is the U.S. playing today or tomorrow or whatever?
U.S. plays tomorrow.
Okay.
But they beat Ghana, a team that they were supposed to lose to. And if they win this upcoming matchup, I forget who it's against, they can go ahead and advance to the next round. Now, if they lose, they might need some help. But I wanted to talk more on the lines of what's going on in Brazil, per se, where they spent like $7 billion on this entire event and security issues along with some other things. You know, there are some concerns I have about, you know, if you can't protect the media entrance and you have people busting doors in and breaking walls down, then you got a problem.
Well, what are you talking about here?
Oh, you didn't know?
No.
Okay, well, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday. The people games and stuff like that were going on, and then some, I guess, Brazilian fan stormed an entrance. They only had one guard. And when they stormed the entrance, they broke down the media wall and stuff like that. So what do you think about that?
They stormed the entrance and broke down the media wall? Is that what you're telling me?
I thought you were talking to him. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they were just being rowdy fans. And
they don't have enough forces in place to prevent things like that from happening. That's crazy.
There was one security guard at that entrance, and I think 200 or 300 people broke through the area, and they pushed down. You know how you have like dividers I don't say auditoriums, but, yeah, auditorium, you have, like, a wall that's collapsible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of those were there, and they knocked it down. They knocked several of them down. And luckily, nobody was on the other side of them, or close to the wall, because they came tumbling down TVs and lockers and stuff like that. And, you know, it's a madhouse. Plus, you have the protesters out in the streets doing all types of things. You know,
it sounds like it's a very tenuous situation there right now.
Very much so. Very much so.
I did catch one of this. I did catch that they were having some type of racial problems.
I'm not sure about the racial problems. You got to tell me about the racial problems. I don't know about
I thought they did. I thought there's a widespread race problem when it has to come with soccer fans, especially the soccer players have to be dark-skinned type, and the treatment they get compared to the European face soccer player, if you know what I'm talking about.
I don't recall that. I really don't. I haven't been able to catch all of the information going on about it, but that's the first I've heard of that. But, I mean, it's not unbelievable because it happens in regular soccer leagues all the time. Somebody saying something about this player, his ethnicity or sexuality or something like that, and then they get fined and suspended or whatever. So it happens. It really does happen. So I don't know.
Okay, I'm just asking because, like I said, I thought I heard something like that in passing, either on TV or through the not print media, but through the internet media. I can't find it right now, but I thought I either read something or saw something or heard something about that. But if you haven't, then I wouldn't even want to go down that road. Because I wouldn't have any accurate information.
Well, you know, the games are doing well. You know, the actual games are rather exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the good point. But outside of the games is what's bringing I guess casting a dark shadow over the World Cup, only
sure.
because you've got, you know, several people sitting here enjoying the game, or, you know, doing the media thing, writing the stories and whatnot. Next thing you know, a wall comes crashing in from these drunk soccer fans. Now, I don't know if all of them were drunk, but it was quite a few of them that broke
mm-hmm.
the windows and stormed the area. But on Thursday's show, we talked about it, and it was, well, what is Mike going to do if we send him down to Brazil and the basketball game get like that? Is he going to be safe? I don't know. Is he? So, it's just a concern or something I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
You know, they spent $7 billion to get the stadiums ready, but all of them aren't ready, and then you got the security, you got the protests, and it's a lot of stuff taken away from the games themselves. I thought you knew about it, so I was going to talk about it. But
no,
yes,
I didn't
no.
know about it, and I remiss because I played soccer in high school. All through high school, I played soccer, so it's not like it's a foreign sport to me. I didn't play football; I played soccer. So I am a soccer fan, but I haven't watched a FIFA game yet.
It's okay. It's all right. Well, let's get ready to transition to American football. We're about to talk about the AFC West. Let's jump right into it. I'll let you pick the teams, and we can go from there.
All right. Starting off with the pretenders, not the contenders. Well, let me put it this way. Starting off with the pretender in the Super Bowl, not really where they in particular, they weren't pretty. They were pretty ordinary in the Super Bowl. It wasn't just a bad day at the office for the Broncos in Super Bowl 48. It was a painful reality check, one that convinced them that all offense in the world doesn't necessarily translate to being the best team on the planet. Seattle was better that day, and San Francisco, the other big bully from the NFC, probably would have been too. So general manager John Elway and his lieutenant spent the offseason overhauling their defense, signing three big-ticket free agents, Aqib Talib, great pick, T.J. Ward, another great pick, and a future Hall of Famer, DeMarcus Ware, before using their number one draft pick on Ohio State cornerback Bradley Roby. For all the changes the Broncos may have made, their bottom line remains the same, Vince Lombardi trophy or bust. There may be a tomorrow with Peyton Manning under center, even if the Broncos win Super Bowl 49. Manning could return for an encore season. But Elway, who knows a little about playing quarterback on the backside of 30, isn't counting on it. He wants to win, and right now. It's official. Manning called the right career audible when he decided to join the Broncos after being jettisoned by the Colts. 2 years after sitting out the entire 2011 season, Manning threw a record 55 touchdown passes and won his fifth MVP award, as the Broncos became the first ever NFL team to eclipse the 600-point mark. Manning will have several new weapons this year, including Monte Ball, who replaced Knowshon Moreno as the starting tailback, and wideouts Emmanuel Sanders and Cody Latimer. Moreno had more than his share of moments in a Denver uniform, including a 224-yard game versus the Patriots, but Ball gives them a more durable back and a better bet to score near the goal line, where the short field can create issues in the passing game. Not that Ball is only a threat between the tackles. He's flying under the radar after being a backup as a rookie, but he has big play potential that could land him in multiple Pro Bowls. Sanders, I really like him, a free agent signee from Pittsburgh, replaces Eric Decker, who signed with the Jets. The big news in the passing game, though, came on day two of the draft when the Broncos traded up in the second round to grab Latimer. With Sanders already on board with emerging superstars Demaryius Thomas, the addition of Latimer sends a clear message that Wes Welker's days in Denver are numbered. Welker was his usual productive self in 2013, but concussion issues have rendered him too high a risk to be counting on week in and week out. With or without Welker, the Broncos possess a devastating crew of receivers who can move the chains and stretch the field. The rest of the crew includes tight end Julius Thomas, a college basketball player who has become arguably Elway's best ever draft pick. I got to believe that. Almost lost in the shuffle of the Broncos season, they did it with left tackle Ryan Clady's sideline for most of the year. Clady's return this season has created a domino effect on the offensive line. Chris Clark, who replaced Clady, will move to right tackle, while incumbent Orlando Franklin will move to left guard in place of Zane Beatles, who left via free agency. Franklin isn't happy about the move, what with tackles much more appreciated on payday than guards, but it all makes sense in the world. Clark is a better pass blocker, and Franklin's forte is run blocking. All the more reason to project big numbers for Ball in this second season. On the defensive side, the Broncos hope to energize their pass rush, but they were shocked to find Ware available. Yeah, that was a shock. With Ware on the edge, the Broncos may be able to match the kind of pressure the Seahawks and 49ers put on opposing quarterbacks. Ware had 19.5 sacks as recent as 2011, and at 32, he seemingly has a lot left in the tank. But Ware's production figures should be linked to the other main pass rusher, Von Miller, who's coming back from injury. 3 years into his career, Miller already is at the crossroads. Will he return to being one of the most feared pass rushers in the league, or will injuries and off-field issues overshadow his enormous talents? One more drug-related issue, and Miller will be suspended long-term. Not only that, but he also tried to bounce back from a knee reconstruction. So in the end, the Broncos won't know how formidable their pass rush will be until they see how healthy Miller is. Ware and a healthy Miller coming off the corner would be a devastating tandem. The defensive line has some depth issues, what with 2012 second-rounder Derek Wolfe experiencing career-threatening health issues last season, but tackles Terrence Knighton and Sylvester Williams, last year's first-rounder, could be a terrific tandem in the middle. Williams started slowly, but after a season in the weight room, he could take a giant career leap. How motivated are the Broncos to wipe out the memory of their Super Bowl loss? Many of their players wound up their off-season workouts by shouting 35, a reference to their 35-point defeat at the hands of the Seahawks. For all the veterans that they have at other positions, the Broncos are going with youth at running back. Third-year player Ronnie Hillman is the most experienced back on the roster. All told, Broncos backs have accumulated 267 carries and a little over 1,100 yards and 6 rushing touchdowns. 18 active NFL running backs have run for more than 5,000 yards. That's basically it. And we can run down a schedule. I'm not going to go into the let me put it as final analysis. The Broncos are in a unique position among NFL teams. They aren't trying to keep pace with the rest of the league. As long as Manning is under center, their competition will come from only a handful of teams, most notably the Seahawks, 49ers, and Patriots. While Denver's offense is in a class by itself, the Broncos haven't been as physical as the elite teams in the NFC. They could be this season. But in the end, they're relying on Miller to regain his status as one of the league's best players. If he does, they could be throwing a parade in downtown Denver. If not, they may still have enough to get back to the Super Bowl. The question remains, can they win it? And one of the things that head coach wanted to do is get tougher. Denver Broncos quite naturally were punked, especially the offensive line were punked out in the Super Bowl early on, and they never recovered. And one of the mantras that they wanted to do in the offseason, meaning the Denver Broncos, is to get more physical, to be a more physical team. And I'll run down a schedule of 2014, and we'll go from there. Starting in week one, they play Indianapolis at home, then Kansas City at home. Week three is at Seattle. Week four, they have an early round bye. Week five, home against Arizona. Week six, at the Jets. Week seven, home against San Francisco. Week eight, a Thursday night against San Diego. Week nine, at New England. Week 10, at Oakland. Week 11, at St. Louis. Week 12, home against Miami. Week 13, at Kansas City. Week 14, home against Buffalo. Week 15, at San Diego. Week 16, at Cincinnati on Monday night. And last but not least, the final game of the season, week 17, home against Oakland. All right, Victor, you're up. Talk to me.
All right, let's start with the first five games. Read them off again.
Let me see. The first game is home against Indianapolis.
Win.
Home against Kansas City.
Loss.
Home against Kansas City. They're going to lose in Denver.
Yes, yes.
Okay. At Seattle.
Ooh, rematch, win.
They're going to win that. They're going to win in Seattle. Right off the bat, Victor, you're amazing me with these two out of the three games.
Come on.
home against Arizona. They're on a bye. Then week five, they go home against Arizona.
Home against Arizona, win.
At the Jets.
At the Jets, win.
Home against San Francisco.
Oh, loss.
Home against San Diego, Thursday night. Short week.
Win.
Short week, really. At New England.
Win.
Oh, at Oakland.
Shocker, loss.
At St. Louis.
Win.
Home against Miami.
Home against Miami, win.
At Kansas City.
At KC, they win because they lost the first one.
Home against Buffalo.
Win.
At San Diego.
Loss.
Really? Okay. At Cincinnati, Monday night. Hello?
Say that last one.
At Cincinnati, Monday night.
When?
Home against Oakland, last game.
When?
You got him 12-4.
Yeah.
You have him 12-4, and I really can't dispute him. But you got some wins that I wouldn't give him wins, and you got some losses I wouldn't give him losses. But I think they even out. I got to believe that 12-4 seemed pretty realistic to me. Your thoughts? I expounded on them pretty well, but I know you have some thoughts on the Denver Broncos yourself before we go into the next team.
Well, I would say that Denver's in a good position to go back to the Super Bowl with all the weapons they added on the defensive side. It all depends on how they work well together. But I think there are going to be a couple of surprises. Like that Raider game. They're not expecting it. I think it's going to hit them. It's early, and they're going to get them and see what happens.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the one of my favorite players that are on the team. That this guy performs week in and week out. MVP fantasy last year. The nuclear option, removing Scott Pioli as general manager and Romeo Crennel as coach and jettisoning the entire stable of quarterbacks, turned the Kansas City Chiefs into Godzilla in 2013. A Cinderella with teeth, the franchise buried arguably the worst season in team history, which was 2-14 in 2012, by rebounding to a historic carthitic 11-5 record and an AFC wild card berth last fall. Hello?
Say again?
Oh, I heard it loud. I thought it was something you said. The Chiefs rolled a 9-0. Chiefs rolled to a 9-0 start and became the first NFL team in modern era to open a season with 9 straight victories after winning 2 or fewer games the year before. I think the Houston Texans can mirror that this year. Even after a deflating 45-44 loss at Indianapolis in the first round of the playoffs, couldn't change all the shine off of Coach Andy Reid's and General Manager John Dorsey's first full season at the wheel. What was supposed to be a transition year instead turned into something magical, but with a slate in 2014 that is the NFL's 7th toughest, that magic could be hard to recapture, at least in the short term. 7th toughest schedule. Offense, when Reid was hired, many Chiefs fans worried that the pass-happy coach might be the worst thing to happen to running back Jamal Charles. They didn't know Andy Reid's M.O. then. They aren't worried anymore. Whether Charles was lined up in the backfield in the slot or even out wide, Reid made it a point to get the ball into the hands of Kansas City Chiefs' best playmaker, who led all the NFL backs in rushing touchdowns, which was 19, and total scores, rushing touchdowns, which was 12, and total scores, which was 19. Reid and Dorsey blew up roughly half the roster left from 2012, but the positional changeover was most dramatic under center, where every incumbent was off the roster by the end of August. Alex Smith, acquired from San Francisco for 2 second-round picks, picked right back up where he left off in 2012, throwing for 23 touchdowns while setting the Chiefs' single-season rushing record by a quarterback with 431 yards on the ground. I didn't really know that. I didn't know he ran that much. His numbers and efficiency. His numbers and efficiency improved dramatically over the final 6 weeks of the season, and Smith feels even more comfortable with the second full year of running Reid's West Coast scheme. If there was a criticism of the Chiefs' new ace single caller, it was the strength of his arm and propensity for checkdowns and dumps. In Smith's defense, the downfield passing game was hindered by a raft of injuries at tight end, a staple of Reid's offenses, and the age of star wideout Dwayne Bowe, who at 29 posted the worst full regular season of his NFL career. Hopefully he can rebound from that. The weapons available to Smith this fall are largely the same as they were last season, and the starters at receiver, Dwayne Bowe and Donnie Avery, are a year older. If there's a silver lining, it is the expected return to the health of the club's top 2 tight ends, Anthony Fasano and second-year man Travis Kelce. Another bonus, rookie speed merchant DeAnthony Thomas, a former track star at Oregon, is expected to be used as a hybrid slot back, tailback type, much the way the departed Dexter McCluster thrived this past fall. But the biggest challenge for Smith is navigating behind a reconfigured offensive line. The Chiefs lost 3 starters to free agency, including left tackle Brandon Albert, former number 1 pick Eric Fisher, who played an injury-marred and inconsistent right tackle as a rookie last year, has been penciled in as Albert's replacement, while super sub Donald Stevenson is expected to hold down Fisher's old spot on the right side. On the defensive side, after years of wandering, the Chiefs found their identity early and ran with it. An aggressive, attacking, man pressed 3-4 defensive front that was beloved in Kansas City. Through the first six games of the season, the Chiefs recorded 31 sacks and were on pace to push the 84 Bears' single-season record of 72. But as the opponents and signal callers improved over the final 7 weeks of the regular season, the sacks started to dry up. The pieces remain in place for another strong unit, starting with the spine up the middle that's built around three Pro Bowlers, nose tackle Dontario Poe, linebacker Derrick Johnson, and safety Eric Berry. Poe shed more than 20 pounds after a so-so rookie season, recording 4.5 sacks while emerging as an every-down defensive lineman and one of the league's top disruptive forces. Johnson, who will turn 32 in November, remains one of the steadier tackles in the AFC after a bounce-back season that saw him run two interceptions back for touchdowns. Berry could be slotted in at either his familiar strong safety slot or try his hand at replacing departed Kendrick Lewis at free safety. Reed and coordinator Bob Sutton are excited to see what second-year man Sanders Cummings can do at safety after a broken collarbone wiped out his rookie season entirely. The Chiefs re-signed Hussein Abdullah as a special teams ace and nickelback and figure to give him the first long look as a candidate to replace Lewis in the lineup. Final analysis, the Chiefs were expected to bounce back in a big way in their first season under Reed and Dorsey, but last season's 9-win improvement exceeded even the most optimistic expectations. The pass rush should still be excellent. The quarterback slot is stabilized for now, and Charles is arguably the best all-around tailback in the AFC. But a brutal schedule and a slew of free agent losses point to a small step back before the Chiefs push forward again. All right, I'm going to run down the schedule here. And seventh toughest schedule in football. Seventh toughest schedule. Remember that.
Seventh toughest. And listen, before you even go any further. Seventh toughest schedule with a team that had one of the easier schedules last year.
Yes.
They overachieved last year. Just want to point that out, but go ahead.
Okay. You want me to run down a schedule, or you want to run down a schedule and pick the winners, win and losses?
Schedule winners and losses.
Excuse, say that again.
I said give the schedule and we'll give wins and losses.
All right. First week, home against Tennessee.
First
at
week home
Denver.
Against Tennessee.
Yeah.
Wait. First week home against Tennessee.
Yeah.
I think that's a loss.
Oh. Okay. At Denver.
At Denver, loss.
You sure about that? I think you gave Denver a loss at Kansas City. I mean, you gave Denver a loss.
Yeah. You're right. So give that
okay.
to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. At Miami.
Excuse me, loss.
Home against New England on Monday night.
Loss.
At San Francisco.
Loss.
Bye week six. Week seven, at San Diego.
At San Diego, I'm going to give them a win.
Home against St. Louis.
Loss.
Home against the Jets.
Loss.
At Buffalo.
Win.
Home against Seattle.
Loss.
At Oakland Thursday night.
On a Thursday night at Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
They always play Oakland well at in Oakland and at home. I'm going to give them a win.
Home against Denver.
I'm not sure if I gave. Oh, I gave them the loss in this for the loss.
So they're going to split. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Okay. At Arizona.
Arizona wins that.
All right, that's a loss there. Home against Oakland.
Oakland.
That's a loss, you're telling me, right?
Yep.
At Pittsburgh.
At Pittsburgh, late in the season, loss.
Home against San Diego. Last game of the season.
Against who again?
Home against San Diego. Last game of the season.
They'll win that one.
So they're going to sweep San Diego. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I just want to make it clear because you had a win at San Diego. Now you have a win home against San Diego also. So if I tally these up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is that right? 1, 2, 3, 4.
That sounds about right. I was gonna give them six and ten, but 5 and 11 is about right.
After 11-5 season, they reverse that and go 5-11.
Yep. Tougher schedule. Teams are gunning for them. They're not going to be the powerhouse they were last year.
Well, I think they can go 8-8. I can't see them going on a negative side and losing 11 games. I think they can at least go 8-8. It's true that teams are going to be gunning for them. True that they have the seventh toughest schedule. True that their offensive line is basically revamped. But I think they have enough offense and a good enough defense to at least get eight wins. I can't see them being on the negative side of 500, especially 5-11. I think they'll do a little bit better than that. But it is what it is. I like them at 8-8. So let's move on to the guys that reside not too far from where you live, up in the northern part of Cali, the Oakland Raiders. General manager Reggie McKenzie spent his first two seasons in Oakland cutting high-salary players and getting the Raiders out of salary cap hell. The Raiders entered free agency with this year with around $65 million in cap space, and McKenzie started spending like a man who had won the lottery. He signed nearly a dozen free agents, most of them in their late 20s and early 30s, veterans with strong resumes and huge chips on their shoulders, which is very inducive, very typical of the Raiders, getting guys with chips on their shoulders. Huh?
No, one of my coworkers said something. Keep going.
Which is very definitely what the Raiders do, get guys that have huge chips on their shoulders. Well, just to kind of throw away, it seems like everybody has something to prove, which is a quote from Maurice Jones-Drew. We all know we have something left, whether it was a bad year last year or things didn't work out from another team, whatever it may be. As a whole, we're fighting for the same thing, which is respect. The Raiders' free agent haul also included ex-Giant defensive end Justin Tuck, former Steeler outside linebacker Lamar Woodley, and former Green Bay wide receiver James Jones. All three owned Super Bowl rings. Excuse me. McKenzie used more of the Raiders' cap space when he traded for quarterback Matt Schaub, another veteran with something to prove. After back-to-back 4-12 seasons, McKenzie and coach Dennis Allen, who I believe is on the hot seat, will face some heat in year three of the regime. Team owner Mark Davis has proven to be more patient than his father, the late Al Davis, but his patience has limits. On the offensive side, Oakland hopes the 33-year-old Schaub can resurrect his career and rejuvenate the Raiders' passing attack. Shaw has passed for more than 4,000 yards three times in his career, but he's coming off his worst season and was benched in Houston. At one point, he threw a pick six in four straight games. Thanks a lot, Mr. Shaw, setting an NFL record. Shaw finished with 10 touchdown passes, 14 interceptions, and a passer rating of 73.0, by far his lowest since being traded by Atlanta to Houston in 2007. If Shaw falters, Allen's options will probably be rookie Derek Carr, who is, I think, now number two on the depth chart and pushing Matt Shaw, from what I hear coming out of a minicamp, a second-round pick, and a second-year pro, Matt McGloin, who's now the third year, who's now the third quarterback, who started six games last season. And I put little interjections in there because Derek Carr is now listed as the number two quarterback, and supposedly going into training camp, he may push Matt Schaub for the number one spot. He's progressed that much, and that's one of the quarterbacks that I wish he had taken over Tom Savage, but the jury's still out on that. Anyway, the Raiders added some experience to the young receiving core by signing Jones, James Jones. He made 30 starts over the past two seasons for Green Bay, catching a combined 123 passes for 1,600 yards and 17 touchdowns. Rod Streeter, who made the roster as an undrafted rookie in 2012, led the Raiders with 60 catches for 888 yards and four touchdowns last season. At 6'3 and 200 pounds, Streeter is a big, physical receiver who could complement the smaller, quicker Jones. Denarius Moore has speed to get deep and a knack for making acrobatic catches, but he has lacked consistency since coming to Oakland as a fifth-round pick in 2011 out of Tennessee. And he has injury issues. He can't seem to stay healthy on a consistent basis. Tight end Mikal Rivera, another Tennessee product, flashed big play ability as a rookie. If they can stay healthy, and this is a big if, Jones Drew and Darren McFadden could form a powerful 1-2 punch at running back. Jones-Drew led the NFL in rushing in 2011 with 1,600 yards, his third straight season cracking the 1,300 mark. He has 8,071 yards career rushing, but averaged a career-low 3.4 yards per carry last season when he rushed for just 803 yards. McFadden, the number four pick in the 2008 draft, has been plagued by injuries and has just one 1,000-yard rushing season. In a surprise move, the Raiders re-signed him for 1 year. Jones-Drew seems more suited for a starting role in the Raiders' power running scheme, but McFadden adds explosiveness and versatility with his skills as a pass catcher. Fullback Marcel Reese, coming off his second straight Pro Bowl season, is another versatile weapon. Jones-Drew, McFadden, and Reese will run behind a new-look offensive line. The Raiders, who lost starting left guard Jared Veldheer as a free agent to Arizona and releasing starting right guard Mike Briscio, could have four new starters joining holdover centers Stefan Wisniewski, Melnick Watson, a second-round pick last year, will get a chance to win the starting job at right tackle. Donald Penn, a free agent pickup from Tampa, is ticketed for left tackle, which that was a very good pickup. Former New York Jet Austin Howard should take Briscio's spot at right guard unless Watson falters and he's needed at right tackle. Kevin Booth, who returned to the Raiders after seven seasons with the New York Giants, will battle Khalif Barnes and rookie Gabe Jackson at left guard. The defense. The Raiders allowed 453 points last year, the second highest total in franchise history. They're ranked 28th against the pass, 13th against the run, and 22nd in total defense. A defensive makeover was in order, and that's what McKenzie and Allen delivered. The Raiders desperately needed to bolster their anemic pass rush and improve their secondary, especially at cornerback. They used free agency to address both needs. They also used the number 5 overall pick to land outside linebacker Khalil Mack, who is a gifted pass rusher and a disruptive force. Tuck will start at right end, while Woodley, an outside linebacker with Pittsburgh, will start at left end in Oakland's 4-3 scheme. Tuck has 60.5 career sacks, including 11 last season. He'll likely move inside and play tackle in the nickel, with Mack lining up at right end. Woodley has 57 career sacks. Former Texan Antonio Smith is expected to start at one tackle spot and add a pass rush push up the middle. They picked up in the draft, and I should have done this with the other teams. The Raiders picked up in the draft, and they had a very good draft. Picked up Khalil Mack as a linebacker in the first round. Second round, they picked up Derek Carter, rookie quarterback. And he picked up a guard in Gabe Jackson, a defensive tackle in Justin Ellis in the fourth round, right along with Keith McGill, another cornerback in the fourth round. Then they had 3 seventh-round picks, and they picked up T.J. Carey, cornerback, Shelby Harris, a defensive end, and Jonathan Dowling, a safety. So if Schaub can regain his 4,000-yard passing form, Oakland's free agent pickups produce and Mack makes an impact, the Raiders have a chance to finish 500. Of course, those are big ifs, and the Raiders face a killer schedule that includes games against defending Super Bowl champion Seattle, New England, and San Francisco. Victor, let's run down the schedule and get me your opinion of what the Oakland Raiders will do 2014.
Well, let me start off by saying this. This is my big surprise, everybody. Oakland's going to come in second in this division. Oakland will be second place in the AFC West. But go ahead.
I don't know what you're smoking. I have no idea what you're smoking. But I'll give you my address and you can send some to me. Oh, man. Anyway, the Oakland Raiders, 4-12 last year, and they're going to come in second this year. Not that it can't be done, but they have a pretty tough schedule. Anyway, at the Jets.
At the Jets, I think I gave the Jets that win. I didn't. I don't think I gave the Jets that win because we talked about Geno Smith starting, right? So I'm going to give that to the Raiders.
Okay. Home against my Houston Texans.
Oh, that's a Raider win.
Really?
Andre Johnson, and I'm going to talk to you about this. Andre Johnson's talking about sitting out the whole year because he's not happy with the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a viable number one. Your starting running back is coming back off, returning off of back surgery. Your quarterback situation, you have Fitzpatrick as your quarterback. The defense isn't as young and as strong as used to be. Yeah, you got J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney, but all you got in the secondary is Joseph. That is it. Ryan Kitchens is coming back off of another injury. So, yeah, I'm picking the Raiders.
At New England.
Loss.
Home against, well, not home, against Miami in London.
Oh, that's a win.
Then you have week 5 is a bye. Then home against San Diego.
Oh, they're at home, so I'm going to give it a win.
Home against Arizona.
Loss.
At Cleveland.
Depends on who's the quarterback. But I'm going to give it a win.
At Seattle.
Loss.
Home against Denver.
I think they win that home game.
Really? Okay. At San Diego.
Loss.
Home against Kansas City Thursday night.
Oh, they win that one.
At St. Louis.
I think they're going to lose that one.
This is pretty rough here going here. Wow, this is rough. Home against San Francisco.
Ooh, that's a loss.
At Kansas City.
I think I already gave them the win, so I'm going to give them a loss on that one.
Home against Buffalo.
Oh, win.
At Denver.
Loss.
All right. Now, from week nine, they have an extremely brutal schedule. Extremely brutal schedule. Check this out, week 9. Week 9 until, I'm going to week 17. Week 9, at Seattle. Home against Denver. At San Diego. Home against Kansas City on a Thursday night. At St. Louis. Home against San Francisco. At Kansas City. They get a break against Buffalo and ended at Denver. That is a brutal, absolutely brutal schedule. That is, oh, my God. That's brutal.
It is. How many wins have I given them so far?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8 wins. 8-8.
And that was for the whole schedule?
That was the whole schedule, yeah. 8-8.
Yeah, that's about right.
That's a brutal schedule, man. I could see them losing every one of those games except for maybe Buffalo from week 9. I mean, it may be splitting with Kansas City, but otherwise than that, man, that is a brutal schedule. Seattle, Denver. They have three division games back to back to back. And then they go on the road to play the NFC West. And then home against the NFC West. That is brutal. And they have an early round bye. I mean, they have the early season bye in week 5. So they're going to be worn down and wore out from week 9 to week 17. And I see them matching. I give them one more win. I give them 5-11. Versus 8-8. I can't see him getting 8-8. The schedule's too tough.
Here's the deal. I think they're going to be this year's Kansas City. They're not going to be on the same level as Kansas City because the new pieces they have haven't had a chance to gel. But you have a two-threat running back system. Yes, they both are often injured, but MJD and Run DMC, that's a pretty formidable pair of running backs. You throw in James Jones at wide receiver. You throw in, I forgot who the other wide receiver is. But
Rod Streeter.
You throw in, yeah, Rod Streeter. Matt Schaub isn't that bad of a quarterback if you use him off of play action. And if they're smart, they'll run the ball pretty damn hard with DMC and MJD. And the defense. Yes, the defense has some age on it, but it's got some experience with that age and some guys that can still play ball. So they're not going to be getting blown out like they were last year. I'm not sure if the guy's name is Rosario or not, the tight end, but you got some folks here that are extremely well-gifted in the sense that if you put it all together, they can be 8-8 or better. They actually can be.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, they picked up some decent free agents. I got to admit that. But they're older. They're really not younger. They're older free agents. So, and with some question marks. That's the key.
Yep.
With some question marks. So, I have to wait and see. I'm not looking for too much from the Raiders. Not this year. Maybe next year. Not this year. And like I said, I think the head coach is on a hot seat. So I think he very much is on a hot seat. All right. Let's move to the last and not least. contender, which I think is going to be number two in the AFC West behind the Broncos. And it's not last but not least, it'll be the San Diego Chargers, whose expectations are high after they rallied to return to the playoffs following a three-year absence. Fans mostly like what they see in Coach Mike McCoy and GM Tom Telesco, who took over after North Turner, my favorite coach in all the land, Norvell Turner, and A.J. Smith, my favorite GM of all in the land, were fired following the 2012 season. They should have been gone before that. The ownership, Spanos, didn't want to give them one more shot, and they proved that they shouldn't even had that. But I digress. Of course, the road to the Super Bowl goes through division rival Denver, which beat the Chargers in divisional round. San Diego didn't exactly charge into the playoffs, but its four-game December winning streak was the difference as Miami and Baltimore faltered. Although McCoy made some glaring mistakes as a rookie coach, he and Telesco have changed the mindset at Chargers Park. One of those they changed was the mindset of Philip Rivers. McCoy was right. Philip Rivers didn't need to be fixed. Everyone else around him needs to get better. That's why the Chargers remain Rivers' team, whether he's throwing to Keenan Allen or Antonio Gates or handing off to Ryan Matthews. And from what I hear, Ryan Matthews is, I think he bulked up a little bit more. He could be a surprise player this year. Rivers will turn 33 in December when he hopes to be leading a late-season run that will get the Bolts into the postseason. After two rough seasons, the franchise quarterback adjusted to McCoy's quicker tempo offense and had one of the best statistical seasons of his 10-year NFL career. He completed a team record career best and NFL-leading 69.5% of his passes for 4,478 yards and 32 touchdowns with just 11 interceptions. Frank Reich had been promoted to offensive coordinator after Ken Whisenhunt was hired as the head coach at Tennessee, and Reich is expected to continue to run an offense that has Rivers dropping back only three steps before throwing, given very little time to think. All he has to do is just get rid of the ball. The Chargers also sometimes run a no-huddle. Besides Rivers' research, the most pleasant surprise for the Chargers was Allen's emergence. The third-round draft pick didn't even play in the season opener, but was a starter by the third game. One of those rare rookies, rookie wide receivers, that comes out of the gate and blows up. The third-round pick, showing a remarkable knack for getting separation from defenders, he went on to catch 71 passes for 1,046 yards and 8 touchdowns. He goes into this season holding down one starting spot. The Chargers are waiting to find out if Malcolm Floyd will return after he sustained a scary season-ending neck injury in the season's second game. Gates remains motivated in part because some outsiders have written him off as being over the hill. I think he is. He'll be 34 by opening day, yet he's coming off a 77-catch season that led the Bolts. The Chargers are excited about his backup third-year pro, Ladarius Green. I think he is the wave of the future. Matthews heads into the final year of his rookie contract. If this season is like last year, when he ran for a career-best 1,255 yards and scored 6 touchdowns, I'm amazed, Victor. I didn't know he ran for that much. I could deal with the 6 touchdowns, but I didn't know he ran for over 1,200 yards.
He did. And the fact that he did that and still missed several games due to injury, I mean, the kid has talent, but he's just injury prone.
Yeah.
He's straight up and down injury prone. That's the problem.
Yep. The Chargers will be trying to figure out a way to keep him. Matthews played in all 16 regular season games for the first time and avoided the kind of major injuries that sidelined him in previous years. Little Danny Woodhead will once again provide a nice change of pace. The Chargers didn't have a bruiser to replace Matthews when he went out of the playoff game at Denver, so they signed free agent Donald Brown, who was Indianapolis' first-round draft pick in 2009 and used their sixth-round draft pick for Arizona State's Marion Grice. The offensive line isn't nearly the mystery it was last offseason. Coach Joe DeAlessandris has his players ready to move around if needed. King Dunlap has settled in at left tackle, and the unit is anchored by center Nick Hardwick, who entered his 11th season. DJ Fluker settled in at right tackle during his rookie season, though he also made 3 starts at left tackle. On the defensive side, only 3 NFL teams have pass defenses more porous than San Diego's, which is why Telesco used his first 2 draft picks and 3 of the first 4 on defensive players. First round pick Jason Verrett is expected to start at cornerback opposite Sharice White. Second round pick outside linebacker Jerry Attachu and 4th round pick nose tackle Ryan Carruthers will at the very least be in the rotation if they don't earn a starting job. The focus is on competing with Peyton Manning and the Broncos. Denver won 2 of the 3 games between the teams last year, including in the divisional round of the playoffs. If anything, the Chargers will have fresh legs in his secondary. Verrett is only 5'10", but is tough and confident, and cornerback Steve Williams, a 5th-round pick in 2013, is ready to go after missing last year with a training camp injury. The Chargers certainly have the makings of a tough defense. One of their first offseason moves was to re-sign one of their own inside linebacker, Donald Butler, before he could hit the free agent market. Butler is a thumper who helped set the tone and wanted to stay in San Diego rather than try to collect a big paycheck elsewhere. Butler plays next to Monte Teo, who will be looking to build on a solid rookie season. There were times early last season when Teo always seemed to be a step behind, but he came on late and was 6th on the team in tackles. He's still waiting to make a big signature play, be it an interception, sack, or fumble recovery. Final analysis, the Chargers certainly are capable of returning to the playoffs, but they're going to have their hands full. With a killer schedule, seems like the AFC West all have killer schedules. They don't have room for the kind of mystifying losses they had last year. The Chargers did win at Kansas City and Denver, both in the season's second half. Yet they needed about 4 miracles down the stretch, not to mention having to go overtime at home to beat the Chiefs' backups in the season finale in order to make the playoffs. The Chargers spent most of December scoreboard watching because of a mid-season slump. They can't push their luck like that this year, or they'll be staying home in January. It picked up, like they said before, Jason Verrett, Jerry Attachu, Chris Watt, Ryan Carruthers, Marion Grice, and Tevin Reese in the draft.
JT.
Yes.
JT.
Yes.
I don't have a lot of time. I got to get ready to go, but I'm going to give you my quick down and dirty on them before I go, because I'm going to need you to close the show out and all that other good stuff.
No problem.
I think San Diego might be tied with Oakland at 8-8, and Oakland gets the tiebreaker for second place. I honestly think that if Ryan Matthews can stay that bull and they mix in Whitehead along with the emergence of that young wide receiver, the return of a couple, Denario Alexander and a few others, Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates coming back to the form they were last year, I think they can do pretty well, even though Ken Whisenhunt isn't there and all that other good stuff. The defense is pretty solid. It'll only get better, but I just think there's some issues there. So I'm going to give them 8-8 at worst. I'll give them 7-9, but that's what I got on them. I got to go, okay?
Okay. Well, you take care, and I'm going to kick your butt this weekend. Have a good night.
We'll talk about this tomorrow.
All right.
All right, bye.
See ya. All right, people. We come to the end of the show. I want to thank you for listening and be able to catch us. You can always catch us in the archives. Vic is always a pleasure doing the show on Saturday. Tune in tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where me, only me, JT, be on the master plan. With that being said, enjoy the rest of the weekend. And we're out.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics.